Hi, I'm Hobie.
I'm G.
I'm Strangey.
Why is that funny?
Oh, God. This is Tales of Togger, a WhatsApp group podcast packed full of absolute nonsense and some football. Like and subscribe, is that what they say?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
Yeah? How do they like and subscribe?
Just like, and I don't know, mate.
We don't know. Just that'll do.
Go to Tales of Togger Twitter. I'll post the link.
Like it. Welcome back, Tales of Togger. Hobie here, and we are joined, or I am joined as ever, by the elusive George Cornwell. Hiya, Joy.
You alright, mate?
How are you doing? I've just called you Joy as well. I don't know. Maybe I've got Joe Joyce on the brain. All right, Joy.
I don't know, man. I don't know how I'm elusive.
You are elusive. You are. Are you joining us at the quiz tonight?
No, mate. No.
No. So you're elusive.
All right. Okay.
That's how it works. Apparently, that's all it takes.
And those are the dulcet tones of Tom Kebabhead Strangeway. Hiya, mate.
Hiya, mate.
How's your head?
I'm here with my
still look like a pita kebab head.
Yep, looks like a pita rat.
And we are also joined, which is what I started by saying, by George's elder brother, who he loves very, very much, Charlie Cornwell. Hello,
afternoon, lads.
Yeah, if there's, you know, when I ask you a direct question, Charlie, don't leave it a couple of seconds before answering. Just answer. You're all right.
You didn't ask me anything.
That's a great point.
Right, okay, Charlie Cornwell, you are here to discuss Arsenal, which is the first section of the show, agreed?
Yes, that's correct. I'm not looking forward to it too much.
Would it be fair to say, before we get started, just for a little bit of context, that you are the worst person in the world?
No, I disagree with that. I think if you ask my mother, I'd be ahead of George as in terms of favourites.
Yeah.
Probably even Gary now.
Okay, well let's canvas opinion. Strangey, Charlie's here. Is there anything that you want to tell him about his character?
Yeah, he's the worst person I've ever met in my life. And he has a top knot as well. So he was once the worst person ever, and he's actually managed to take it up a notch by having a top knot. So how he's done that, I don't know, but yeah, can't stand him. Nice to have you on, Charlie.
Gee, how is it having your brother on? I mean, you two have always had a lot of affection for each other. Would that be fair?
Well, as you know, I was against having him on. I'd have literally had anyone else in the world on, but here we are.
Excellent. So if you could just round it off with a brief sentence or something that you want to tell your brother about his character.
Just a ginger knobhead.
Okay, now we've done the introductions. We are going to talk about Arsenal, Mikel Arteta, Arsenal Fan TV, the Bumbaclots. Is that how you say it, Charlie?
Bumbaclots.
Oh, God.
Yeah, close enough, mate.
Then Charlie will be leaving us. We'll then be looking over the weekend's action. This far. We are recording this at 1:45 on Sunday. So if we miss something, we apologise to the legions of fans that we have. And then we are going to go to the sponsors. We're going to go to G. And we might even sneak in a little bit about Ben Brereton, the Blackburn Rovers winger. Yeah, I think he's a winger, is he, G? Who's currently being linked to Real Madrid.
Winger slash striker, mate. You never know where he's going to pop up, to be honest.
Yeah?
But we'll cover that.
Excellent. Okay. So let's get straight into it. Charlie, Mikel Arteta, as an Arsenal fan, I mean, I should have said that, actually. You are an Arsenal fan, which is why, and the only reason we would ever have you on this podcast. We don't want you to sully it. Talk to us. As an Arsenal fan, what do you think of Mikel Arteta and the job he's doing?
I think when he came, Arsenal were in disarray, really. We had players were very much against the Emery regime. Lundberg came in and did okay, and Arteta came in and steadied the ship a bit, and of course won the FA Cup. So, first few months in charge had to be considered a success. He shored up our defence a bit, went five at the back, and then coming to this season, and really we were hoping to build on that, build on the FA Cup win. It's obviously not been a good start for us. It's been a bit of a struggle.
All right. So, and where do you think that struggle is coming from in comparison to last season?
Well, I think with last season, if you look at the chances created, it wasn't high, but we were converting a lot. So maybe that masked a few of our issues. And then this season, our conversion rate's gone down drastically, and it's just showing. It's very showing us to be a very boring football team, really, at the minute. Defence is looking okay, apart from the last two games, but I think we've conceded the second least in the league, which is good effort. But we're still mixing between five at the back and four at the back. It's like he doesn't know what to do. He says he prefers a four at the back himself, but we just can't defend that way.
I mean, when your manager
just what you want to hear,
yeah, your manager comes out and basically says, you know, I need an extra person in there. What do you think of the fact, though, that obviously we've discussed before that three at the back is an offensive system, because it gives you more bodies further up the pitch. So as the build-up comes out, you can then look to add depth to the pitch. But there seems to be some sort of strange horseshoe a rule whereby every single player apart from Aubameyang needs to be in the first third of the pitch. Why do you think Arteta doesn't like the middle or offensive thirds of the pitch?
I don't know exactly how to answer that, but I'll try. Well, the five can be an offensive system, of course, but the way we're playing it is very defensive, and the way we're playing out from defence is just so slow and ponderous, and people are just clocked onto it now. They find it easy to play against, and it just means it's such slow build-up. And there just doesn't look like there's any bravery or creativity in the team. Once we get it into some good positions, we'll take that extra touch rather than trying to play the through ball or the quick passing. And it just means teams get back and defend against us. And that's where the horseshoe comes in, because we're going back to our centre-back who's passing it across field, down to the next wing, coming back across. And it's just a shame we don't have the centre midfielders to really control a game, it seems.
G, to bring you in here, Charlie says that centre midfield is a problem, and that's the reason why Arsenal can't seem to sort of bravely play out. But if you look at
the only problem,
one of the problems. Oi, listen, Piers Morgan, you shut up while I'm going on. All right. one of the problems he mentions, but at the same time, if you look at the midfield that he has, Dani Ceballos, Elneny. I mean, that's a fair point on Elneny. Although Elneny seems to be having a renaissance at the moment. Granit Xhaka, lovely range of passing, even if he is a bit immobile. Obviously, we've got Partey in there at the moment, but he is injured. Joe Willock. I mean, do Arsenal genuinely have a problem with the players that they have, G? Or is it Mikel Arteta isn't finding a way for them to bring the ball out into more offensive situations?
No, I think it's the players, mate. I think he's inherited just crap, to be honest. He's got Aubameyang, who's decent. Lacazette is Benteke, basically, transformed. Pepe just hates having the ball, loves giving it to the other team. Aubameyang and Kieran Tierney. I'd get rid of the rest of them.
Saka, come on.
Saka's all right. He'll be a good player in future, I'm sure. But yeah, they're just... And that's the thing with Arteta. I don't think you can judge him because he's... We know you can't just come in like similar with you at Everton at the minute, Carlo Ancelotti can't come in and say, I've got one good player in the team, I need to bring in 10 more. You know what I mean? You have to do it over time, don't you? So, slowly improve the team, which I think Arteta's trying to do. Like you say, the worrying thing is that they just play... if that's going to be his plan for forever, just the back, you know what I mean, the two centre-backs standing in the six-yard box and, pass to each other, I don't think that's ever going to work. Like I say, he's been mentored by a fraud.
G, we'll come on to that, mate. If I set you off, that'll be the next 50 minutes of the podcast gone.
Well, no, can I just what I'm saying is, he's come from someone who has a philosophy, who won't break from that philosophy, but someone who has the players to kind of do that. Whereas Arteta, if he's got this philosophy, he can't just do it with, you know what I mean? He can't do it with David Luiz and whatever other shite they have.
So that brings me pretty perfectly to what I was going to say. So we obviously have this idea that Mikel Arteta can't play the way that he wants to play. However, at the same time, the first issue, I guess, that G alludes to succinctly is, well, do you need to vary your game? Which I think is an argument Carragher and Neville had about managers compromising. But does it also point quite glaringly to the fact that Matteo Guendouzi is on loan in France and Mesut Ozil is sat in his flat or his house raking in 350 grand a week? Or not? Are both of those players, Strangey, not players that could help him realise this way of playing?
Yeah, I think it's strange because, as you say, he's clearly got an idea in mind. He wants to sort that back line out and make them more difficult to beat, tougher to beat, which I think in spurts he has done. I know Corn mentioned... Charlie, I shouldn't say Corn because they're both Corns, but Charlie mentioned about the last couple of games being a bit of a bit of a shitty situation in terms of goals conceded, chances conceded. He certainly does seem to have got them a little bit tighter at the back, generally. But as you say, I think he needs something. He needs a spark. He needs someone in that midfield who can take the ball from those centre-backs in this plodding build-up and make something happen. Spin his man, turn his back, get on the half-turn, play a bit of a cutting pass to these forward players. That just doesn't seem to exist in that first team at the moment. And I think... to allude to what G said, there is a personnel problem. I think a lot of those players are not good enough to turn it around for him and with him.
So what about you, Charlie? Do you think that there's an issue there whereby Mesut Ozil or Guendouzi, I'm thinking Guendouzi more for the ability to break the lines with his running. Even Lucas Torreira, who you and I always enjoyed a good debate over how vastly overrated he is, the one thing that he would do is pass forwards and pass bravely. Is Mikel Arteta biting off his nose to spite his face?
Quite possibly. I think we did disagree on Torreira, but I think just any and more sorts of fans, he'd prefer him over Guendouzi every day of the week. I think I never was a big fan of Guendouzi. But then again, with Ozil, like Ozil's not the one who's getting the assist now, but he just controls tempos of games still, which is something we can't do. But that's just a strange situation. I don't understand what's happened with Ozil. He's been frozen out by three different managers now.
So what? Let me ask you bluntly, Charlie. What has Mikel Arteta done to deserve being, first of all, head coach and then football club manager? And distinguishing between the two usually isn't important, but it is in this because, of course, all of the football side of thing is now being run by Mikel Arteta, a la Alex Ferguson or Wenger. So Arsenal have shifted completely to a director of football sort of committee model, back to a one-man autonomy model. What has Mikel Arteta done to deserve such faith from the Arsenal board?
It's a difficult one because when Emery was appointed, Arteta did apply and they deemed it he was too inexperienced to take the role. So 18 months later, he's not done much else since he stayed on as assistant manager at City. But obviously, he's not a managerial experience and he's come in and he did a good job then for the first few months. Arsenal looked a bit of a different team, a bit difficult to break down. won the FA Cup, of course. But I just think it goes to show that Arsenal aren't really sure what they're doing in the boardroom and in the background of the club. They're still figuring it out in a way. I just think it's a terribly run club at the moment. And I can't tell you what he's done to deserve this role.
Well, have you other boys think that there is a reason why Arsenal, who we can agree are one of the biggest clubs in the country, have decided that another club's number two is good enough to be their first team manager? Strangey?
No, it's actually something I wrote down earlier. I can't understand why I understand, obviously, Emery went at the time he went because it was clear that he'd lost the dressing room a little bit, that there needed to be a change in. It goes back to the sort of Ollie point we made a few weeks ago. They've got rid of someone who's a proven winner. He's been a success at every club he's been at and thought to themselves, he can't do it, so let's get someone who's no manager experience in to do it. It makes no sense to me. Not only to just appoint somebody from a number two position to the head coach, but in a time where the club is clearly in a bit of a rebuilding mode, I think they kind of accept that they're not going to be in the top four for a couple of years at the very least. You know, they need to sort it out. Why is he the man to oversee a complete overhaul of the first team squad and football affairs? I just can't get my head around it.
G, what about you? Anything that you can think of? I mean, you've already alluded to the fact that you don't like Pep Guardiola, and Mikel Arteta has obviously spent the last 4 or 5 years learning from Pep Guardiola. I mean, why do you think he got the job, Arteta?
Just because he used to play for Arsenal. And I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong, because that's obviously been a case with, say, Pep at Barca, Zidane at Madrid, the likes of Ollie, the likes of Lampard. It seems to be it's a common thing, isn't it? It's not like Arsenal have done anything groundbreaking to turn to an old player and say, we'll give you a go. I don't see why not. And I think, like I said, I'd give him plenty of time.
So I'd
give him a couple of years at least.
You'd give him a couple of years?
Yeah.
So at the moment, when Emery was sacked, were there not better options out there? I mean, one of them, I will still maintain, Carlo Ancelotti, he would have bitten off Arsenal's hands rather than come to Everton. Well, why do you think, Charlie, that other options weren't looked at with at least a bit more pedigree than a failed Spanish international footballer?
I don't know. I wonder if finances came into it, and apparently Arteta did have a reputation for being a great coach, and they took a risk on the young upcoming manager, hoping he was going to transform the club, of course, as well being the ex-player and the ties to Arsenal. But yeah, maybe the finances came into it as well.
Well, the finances are there to pay Pierre Aubameyang more than Mesut Ozil earns. So have Arsenal wrongly prioritised tying down a 31-year-old who can't hit a barn door rather than a quality manager?
It's a great question.
I'd argue that he could hit a barn door, but but again, this was again the poor just overall management of Arsenal. He was our best player, and everyone knew he was, and he was the reason we did as well as we did last year. It's the reason we won the FA Cup, and we were just put into a position where we had to bend over to his demands, basically, because we felt we had to keep him for the sake of Arsenal as the brand, probably proving we can still keep big players, and with no one else that could score as many goals as he does. He's obviously had a bad start to the season, but I think he'll come out of that. It's just poor management overall by Arsenal Football Club.
But not to twist the knife on you, but now if you've got the opportunity with the benefit of hindsight, what do you do? Do you hire a more experienced manager, or do you give a huge contract to a 31-year-old who, even, listen, I'm
tongue-in-cheek when I say that he can't hit a barn door. He's obviously a quality player. He's 31. The damage of not tying him to a contract is already done. You can get some sort of fee for him last summer. Why do you think that that decision was made? With the benefit of hindsight, do you think that Arsenal would now make a different one?
I don't think they'd make a different one. I think they'd... I think they'll still keep faith with Arteta. There was talk this week that the Cronkies are willing to back him over the next 18 months and then start putting money into the club with him behind the transfers. So I think Arsenal, there's nothing to suggest they're unhappy with Arteta. It's obviously not the start, but yeah, I don't think they'd change a thing.
Are we experiencing deja vu, G? If you think about Aaron Ramsey, if you think about Alexis Sanchez, now Aubameyang, I feel like there's other examples of Arsenal.
Well, Lacazette's...
Sorry, go on.
I'm going to say Lacazette's going to be an example because next summer he'll be down to 1 year. He's not proving anything to suggest he should be extended. And his fee's going to be drastically down on what it would have been this summer when we had good offers for him.
Yeah, so maintaining the point. Are Arsenal the worst-run football club in the league?
Yeah, maybe. It's hard to say that, isn't it, with Ed Woodward down the road, but... yeah,
down the road. You mean 250 miles up the M6, mate, yeah?
Well, down the road from where we live.
What, Saudi Arabia?
So, anyway, ignore that. We'll edit that out. I'm off track now. With the contracts things, it seems that way, doesn't it? Because, yeah, it's like they're caught unaware all the time, and it's like one day they're just like, oh, Aaron, how long have you got left on your contract? He's like, oh, 3 months, boss. He's like, oh, shit. Probably should have addressed this sooner. it does seem to happen there more than you see at any other club, doesn't it?
Yeah, and is that the real reason that progress isn't being made, Strangey? Is it the fact that they just keep making poor decisions? I mean, if I just have a look now in the last sort of 3 or 4 years at the deals that have had to have been done. I'm looking here at Serge Gnabry was sold to Werder Bremen for 4.5 million. I'm looking at the fact that Yaya Sanogo was given a free trip. No, sorry. I'm looking at the fact that Alexis Sanchez was swapped effectively for Mkhitaryan, was given a free.
Van Persie will be the biggest one, won't he?
Van Persie was allowed to go for £25 million. There are rivals. Lucas Perez bought for £15 million, I think it was. Sold for £4 million 18 months later. I mean, you're just going through the sales. Laurent Koscielny, not tied down to a new deal, kicked up a stink, gone for £4 million. Are Arsenal, I ask you the same question. And Lucas Torreira, I'm just trying to find how much he was bought for. Charlie, you might be able to help me out.
20-something million.
£26 million. And he's now on loan at Atletico Madrid. Are they the worst-run club over the past 5 or 6 years? Out of, let's say, the elite, but maybe all of the Premier League?
Yes, 100%. If you're talking elite clubs specifically, top 10, without a shadow of a doubt, there's so many bizarre decisions made every year, it seems, there's something going on. And, you know, we talk about recruitment of players, some of them you just mentioned there. It has not been good enough solidly for 15 years, probably 10, 15 years. I mean, how long did we all sit around in pubs and in group chats saying, when are Arsenal just going to sign a holding midfielder and a centre-half after Gilberto retired, which was fucking 40 years ago, it seems. And they've still not sorted it out. It just makes no sense. Everyone in the world can see what needs to happen and some additions that need bringing in, apart from the board at Arsenal and the person making the decisions. It's just bizarre. Specifically since Arsene Wenger went, obviously, it's gone to absolute shit. But even the last couple of years under him, there were some questionable deals made.
Kim Kjellstrom.
Yeah, very poor. Just very, very
I mean, 2019-20, who was there, Charlie? Who was at the club at the time? I remember Emery saying that he wanted Aaron Ramsey to stay. Who at the club was qualified to allow Aaron Ramsey to leave on a free? And just to confirm, he joined Juventus.
It was, I forget what it was, Sal Blood.
Oh, yeah, him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was him.
I can't pronounce his name. We've just fired him recently, anyway. Our director of football, he was negotiating with Ramsey, and Ramsey thought the deal was practically finished. And then the very last minute, they just took the deal off the table, said, we're not willing to pay you that much.
So it's even the smaller scale stuff. Gio, I'll come back to you. Willian on a free transfer, and Cedric Suarez was signed on a £5 million loan deal. And if it hadn't been for lockdown, wouldn't have played until the end of the season.
And we could sign him on a free.
Yeah, when you would sign him on a free. So it's a £5 million for a loan, and then he's on a Bosman in the summer. What is going on at Arsenal?
I mean, I have no idea what... I don't know what's it called? I don't know what's going on with that deal, because obviously that just sounds bizarre. There must be something more to it than that. Because still, you just wouldn't do it, would you? Unless maybe someone else wanted him.
If it's an isolated issue, then I would understand the rationale behind what you're saying there. But we're talking about systemic. And even though we might talk about former directors of football, and obviously Charlie's on the podcast today because he knows more about Arsenal than all of us. But it seems, you know, there was some bizarre decisions with Wenger, some bizarre decisions with Unai Emery, some bizarre decisions with Mikel Arteta to have Mesut Ozil not even registered, you know, trying to force him out when I think we all know Mesut Ozil is probably the most headstrong footballer in the league. Is it top to bottom in the club, a club that needs a huge reset? And going back to Mikel Arteta, stranger, are there better managers out there to help them through this period?
Well, yes, there are, absolutely. And that's why I was questioning the appointment at the time. It was just a very odd appointment in my eyes, not just to have someone come in and manage the football club, but to manage a club that's clearly in a rebuild setting. But obviously that would have been, you know, when did he get the job? December last year, was it, or something?
Yeah.
Nearly a year ago or whatever. That would have been then. Now, you get to this point now, I mean, I don't think they can pull the plug on him and look for a better option now. I think that he's there now, isn't he? They've got to give him time. They've got to back him. They've got to basically do as he says and wants, because he's now calling the shots on the football side of things. So they're stuck with him now. And it's just weird that they are. Another odd decision to add to the menu.
I know. After reading the groundbreaking book, Big Sam, I know when Big Sam went for interviews, he used to take like a nice PowerPoint presentation. Whether Mikel Arteta's blown him away with a PowerPoint presentation, you never know.
I mean, I don't really know what to reply to that. I mean, it's coming down to fucking Microsoft PowerPoint. That's what we're talking about. Charlie, talk to us about the fact that £72 million now buys you one left foot.
Oh, that was a strange one, wasn't it? I don't know who pushed that deal through, because Emery's come out and Freddie Ljungberg, who was very much involved in the first team at the time, they both said that they wanted Zaha.
Oh God!
So and then
if I could just interject very quickly, mate, just for a bit of extra context before you carry on, Everton were in talks for Pepe at the time. We needed a winger. We also wanted Zaha. Zaha was too expensive. And we were in talks for Pepe. And we were blown out of the water from an unnamed club who decided to bid nearly double what we were bidding. Have a guess who that club is, mate. Double.
It's not a difficult one to guess.
Double.
Well, apparently, when Arsenal's the scouting team were watching him, they valued him between 40 and 50 million euros.
Right.
So I don't know how we've ended up getting up to 72.
Million pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So about 85 million euros.
I don't know how we've jumped at least 35 million.
Well, I guess common sense from Arsenal. Well, no, I'm going to scratch that. Arsenal have no common sense. Would it be fair to say that because it's split over 5 years, that's where the price hike has come from?
Yeah, probably. I don't know what all the causes are in that, but it must be the way, because we obviously Arsenal couldn't afford that amount of money up front. So the club were just in a poor position and again got bent over and did nothing about it.
Honestly, it's a terrible football club. It's just top to bottom.
It's strange. And we were looking for a attacking player because we weren't looking good at going forward. And I know everyone said our defence was terrible, which it was. But it wasn't our only issue. But I just don't know the decisions that they've been making. But this summer we did quite well. We got Gabriel in. He looks a very good defender. We got Partey in. Maybe we're on the up.
Do you remember when you were really good?
I do.
I mean, Thomas Partey is an outstanding signing. Strange, is he going to be up there? Do you think by the end of the season we're going to be talking about Thomas Partey as the signing or one of the signings of the summer?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's a top draw player from what I've seen of him, which is very little, obviously, so far in an Arsenal shirt. I think he's had like 3-4 appearances, if that. But he just looks a cut above the rest of them around him, which begs the question, why did he go to Arsenal? He's probably standing around in training going, what have I done here? You know, but he's done it now and he's stuck with them now, unfortunately. But yeah, he looks quality. And I think Gabriel looks decent as well. I think, listen, he's done all right in the market this summer, I think, Arteta, and he's brought in a couple of decent players. But they need about 10 more. You know, it's going to be another 3-4 years before that squad is really ripped out all the shit and have, has got the players in that he wants and hopefully that will play to his way and an idea of football, you know.
G, anything that you would like to round up on with regards to anything that we've discussed before we ask Charlie a few more final questions?
No, not really, mate.
No, I mean,
Can I just say one final thought on Arsenal? Unai Emery is now overseeing a rebuild at Villarreal, who have lost a few quality players over the last 18 months, and he's rebuilt them to third in the league.
Oh, so maybe that's a manager that you guys should be looking at, Charlie.
A proven winner, someone who's coached before at the highest level, decent at rebuilding a squad. Yeah, I mean,
it's strange. Will you do an impression of him saying good evening?
Of course I will. Good evening. Every press conference, weren't that just the best thing about
him? Lovely man. Charlie, what, let's have a quick look now at where Arsenal are in the league. They're 3 points off Everton with the game in hand. You're lowly in 14th place. I think you've got Wolves, haven't you? Is it today?
Wolves this evening. I think we're away.
Wolves away. So what are you hoping for now? You're 9 games into a new season. What are you thinking?
I still think we've got to be looking at Europa League, which I thought would be part of the achievement before this, going into this season, actually.
Top six?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a poor start to the season, of course. He needs to change it around quickly. But it's been a strange start to the league season as a whole. some teams are just doing better than expected, and then your top team. I think Liverpool have... Oh, Wasps got battered by Villa, didn't they? City haven't had the best start. I think it's just a strange start to the season.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll just see how it goes. I think one of the issues we have there is Emirates was a bit of a... You know, it's a difficult place to come to in the past. And now, with no fans, the home advantage has disappeared near enough, and we've just not looked great at home either. And our away record's been terrible the last few seasons.
Yeah,
absolutely. So he has to change it very quickly, but top six is still what I'm looking for.
Absolutely, mate. I mean, all those Chinese tourists must have made the place really intimidating. My God. Jesus, I've been to the Emirates two or three times. I think each time with you, Charlie, and it is a morgue. There is a pin drop.
They're lively outside, though, aren't they? Robbie and Troop and the lads.
Yeah. With the bumper clots.
Please stop saying bumper clots. We're going to get thrown off the air.
Charlie, speaking of Arsenal fan TV, it's drawn a little bit of criticism. For perhaps not representing Arsenal fans, even though it is obviously very prominent on the airwaves or YouTube airwaves, I should say. What's your view on it? Arsenal fan TV, a good thing, a bad thing? Are you all about the Dizzy Bloods?
Can you stop, please? I watch a couple of interviews after games now and again. It's just the morons on there usually are giving outrageous opinions, but it's not different to a lot of clubs who have criticism from fans on social media and stuff. I don't think it should hinder anything that happens within the club.
Yeah. And what about you, Strangey or G? Any views on Skiddy Skid Bop Bop and the gang?
please. it's just a good laugh, isn't it, watching them all have a meltdown every week. You know, people who actually think Arsenal are going to do something week in, week out, and for some reason they're surprised when they fall short, even though it's been happening for about 3 years. I just find it hilarious, and it's not too different from the podcast, really, just morons going on and expressing stupid opinions, you know. So
absolutely. I'm all for it. Charlie, anything that you would like to round up with?
Not too much. I think most Arsenal fans are still in support of Arteta. I think we want to give him the chance. But just a poor start to the season. We'll see how we progress over the next few months.
Yeah, well, at the very least, it obviously shows on his CV that he can rebuild clubs, that get elite clubs up to the top four or five places in the league. And obviously, he's done really well making cups of tea for Pep for the past 5 years. So, all the best to you and Mikel Arteta, who I just want to say, in case anyone is wondering, I cannot believe he's got that job.
I think that's been apparent, mate, from your line of questioning.
But thank you very much, Charlie, for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to have you, mate.
No worries. Speak soon, lads.
Cheers, buddy.
So that's Charlie gone. Lovely to hear his views. How do you think he did, George? How did your brother do?
He weren't great, was he? he's no DH, I'll give you that. He's no DH.
Yeah. What do you think your dad, who listens to this podcast, what do you think he's going to be thinking? Is he going to be proud that both of his sons are on primetime podcast?
I'd imagine not, no. I'd imagine disappointed, if anything. Yeah. I'm sure he'll let me know.
Okay, we're going to now go over to Tom Strange, right? Who, as ever, has been beavering away, finding us a sponsor. Strangey?
Beavering, eh? Beavering, I hear you say. Seamless link there. Animal Talk. This week's show is sponsored by Collins Kennels. Collins Kennels are looking after the show this week. They are a range of dog sitting and kennel services run by former professional footballer Colin Calderwood. So he's now looking after your pets when you are out of the country on the holidays, whether you've got a rigorous working schedule, Colin Calderwood is running a kennel dog sitting service up in Scotland, Glasgow City Centre, colinskennels.com.
So let's just say you're not in Scotland. Is there any way, does he do a click and collect service?
He's just mainland Scotland at the moment, unfortunately, but looking to expand, obviously trying to get his name out there and raise his profile, and that's why he's agreed to sponsor the show and for us to promote his service. So very much for our Scottish listeners, this one, for the Chris Morgan.
No, excellent. Gee, I mean, what do you think of all these footballers that are expanding into different areas once they've retired?
I'm massively for it, mate. Massively for it, I think. Fair play to Colin. The wages weren't what they were back then, were they? You know what I mean? You've got to make a living.
This is it. You know, he's got to keep his profile and keep doing a good thing for the local community of Glasgow. So, yeah.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Strangey. G, over to you for your section of the show.
Right, so this week's segment is titled A Greasy with Keezy. So what I'm going to do, guys, obviously I watch every weekend arguably the best broadcaster on the telly, Richard Keys. So what I'm going to do is I've jotted down a few things Keezy thought yesterday, and I just want to get, I'll go to one of you and just a quick sentence on if you're greasy with Keezy or disagreesy with Keezy.
This is fantastic. What a sentence.
Right, so talk about Worldwide Manager of the Year. They've released a 5-manager shortlist. I'll go to you, Strange. Should Chris Wilder be on that shortlist? Yes, the whole world.
Did you say worldwide? A 5-man shortlist. I think he did a great job, Chris Wilder, last year. A really, really good job. But I'd struggle to say that he was one of the top 5 managers in world football, maybe. I'm going to disagree with Keezy.
Keezy thinks he should be.
Keezy say he should be.
I'll give you the 5 names, and I think there's a reason he chose this, because there's one he doesn't agree with. Let me see if you can guess which one it is. So we have Hans Flick, obviously won the Champions League and Bundesliga with Bayern Munich. Jürgen Klopp romped the Premier League with Liverpool. Zinedine Zidane won the La Liga with Real Madrid. I'm not sure what his first name is, but Lopetegu, who is a Sevilla manager, who won the Europa League. And Marcelo Bielsa.
Yeah, yeah, see, I saw Bielsa on this list, but it was a bigger list. It was about 15. Again, I think he did a fine job with Leeds, but come on. I mean, no. I mean, there's got to be someone who's better than both Bielsa and Wilder. And more.
Well, this is one for you, Hobbs. Keezy said. We shouldn't be comparing Ancelotti and Bielsa. They're completely different levels.
Which way around?
He thinks Ancelotti's much better, you know.
Well, I think the thing about Bielsa is that he's an animal, isn't he? The teams that he builds, if he manages to build them, are unbelievable. But let's not forget, he walked into Marseille, looked at all the fat idiots that were there, and walked out again almost the same day. So this idea that he's got a huge pedigree, constantly winning things, I'm not so sure is accurate.
No, also, I don't. I agree with that.
Whereas Carlo, I mean, I'm sorry. Whether people hate Everton or not, people like Everton. There is no denying that Carlo Ancelotti is one of the greatest ever football managers, ever. Look at his CV.
Yes, Keyes actually said second to none.
Absolutely.
Yeah, discuss Ancelotti.
It has to be. Is Keyes an Everton fan? I think he is, isn't he?
No, Keyes is a Coventry fan. Andy Gray, his obviously sidekick, is a Everton fan.
I don't know why. I always thought Keezy had a soft spot for him anyway. He think that Bielsa should be on that list or no?
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, well, I'd agree with him. Unless Daniel Fark was up for it a year earlier.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'd argue the Championship's the best league in the world, but I know a lot of people disagree with that.
yeah, you'd argue it, whether you believe there's any merits in your argument.
Well, yeah. We'll come on to that later when we discuss Brent Brereton.
All right, mate.
Right, I'm going to go to you, Hobbs. Obviously, you have been known as the Tony Pulis of Saturday League football.
Yes.
So being a manager, it doesn't matter who your captain is.
Nah, completely untrue. I disagree. I disagree with Keezy.
Disagreezy with Keezy. You say disagreezy, please, mate. That's to roll off the tongue.
Disagreezy with Keezy. Sorry, that's it. Yeah. So, yeah, we are a football team that's in, I think, two divisions below semi-pro down in London. And when you get to that level, your captain is really important. And our captain left in the summer when I took over as manager. And I chose the guy who's one of the best players, but he is the one with the highest standards. And I actually think that's what's been wrong with Everton, in that Seamus Coleman has got high standards, but he doesn't tangibly have them. It's not like Seamus Coleman has reached certain heights and therefore demands those heights off everyone else. Seamus Coleman demands, you know, has expectations when it comes to professionalism and knowing what the club is about. But I think it's a massive step down, or should I say it's a massive issue, that he walks in and he adds James Rodriguez in there, adds Allen in there, two winners. Well, the rest of them aren't winners.
Well, that's why he brought it up, the Ancelotti thing, because Ancelotti was asked about making Mason Holgate captain. And Ancelotti was basically just looked confused, as if to say, well, who cares? He wears the armband.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't know. Seamus Coleman is out. Lucas is our most influential player. Good personality. But, yeah, I've absolutely no idea who else it would be. And I think that's an issue with Everton. Yesterday, I think we can all agree, a brilliant game, because he knew where the weaknesses of the opposition was and did try to do something about it. And I think too many of those Everton players can see issues that are out on the pitch, but either don't have the personality or the conviction to drive the team on and do something about it. So as the next couple of years goes on, I fully expect Ancelotti to be removing more players that can't do it. And in the end, you'll have a team, an Everton team, that can change and adapt as the game goes on. I thought they did a decent job at doing that yesterday, Everton, but still didn't have the conviction. And I think that comes from captaincy.
Yeah, fair. Fair, mate. Right, Strange, I'm going to come to you as our VAR specialist. So, I'm guessing you saw Salah's ruled out goal yesterday. So, Keezy thinks that these decisions should be done with the eye. So, we should go to VAR, but you should look at it. If it's not obviously offside, you give it. You don't get all these lines out and rule out at all.
No, I disagree with Keezy, unfortunately. Offsides are probably the one thing that are working relatively well from time to time with VAR, because sometimes you just can't see that he is offside, and he is, if that makes sense. But what they need, it certainly needs tightening up, offside and VAR. I mean, the one that springs to mind is Patrick Bamford, when he shoved his arm out as if to where he wanted the ball, and he got ruled to be offside for that. That's pathetic. But Salah's foot was offside yesterday, and he could score with that, and he eventually did. So I think for those kind of decisions, it's kind of working in a way.
Gee, could I jump in on that?
Yeah.
I think people like Richard Keys or Jurgen Klopp or Jamie Carragher or anyone that is sort of discussing the idea that VAR isn't doing its job outside specifically is just being moronic. Football now, whether people like it or not, has lots and lots of money in it. The reason why players earn as much as they do is because of the TV revenues and the amount of money that is ploughed in from people wanting to watch the game. That's how the game has improved in terms of the players are quicker, stronger, the pitches are better. Everything is based on money. But also what is lost sometimes is people's jobs. So people are employed by football clubs And imagine if we were still in a situation now where a team was relegated because of a series of offsides that if you could use technology to eradicate, they would have stayed up. You know, so it's far more important now to get decisions right than it ever has before. If you want to strip it back and go back to the early 90s, where there was no fucking money in the game whatsoever, but yeah, you could use your eyes for offside calls, fine. But the game has moved on. And it really annoys me when dinosaurs or dinosaur thinking like that don't appreciate that it's people's livelihoods. Clubs go down and they make a load of redundancies.
Yeah, the manager gets potted as well. The players get sold on. Yeah, I completely agree.
I'm going to give you one more. Right. Due to the integrity of the sport, fans should only be allowed back in when they're allowed in every stadium.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I agree with you.
Agrees you with you 100%.
It's not going to be fair, that. I mean, Everton, I've got 2,000 fans in against Chelsea on the 12th, I think it is, or the 5th. I mean, it's just not fair. That's just, you can't have that.
Cheers as well. I'll tweet Keezy your feedback.
That was a really, really good segment, mate. Cheers, well done. Mate.
Hey, no problem.
Last week's even was.
It was a ridiculous bet that was just fobbed off immediately.
Yeah, it just made no sense whatsoever. Yeah, you basically wanted. You're the man that can't be asked to do your own bets, and then you want.
whoa!
And yet you want us to plot the table each week and take 50p off each other. all right, let's look at some of the results that have gone on so far this weekend. So if I just run through them, Newcastle beat Crystal Palace 2-0. Brighton drew 1-1 with Liverpool. Burnley were thrashed at home by Manchester City. Everton were beaten by Leeds 1-0. West Brom compounded misery on Chris Wilder with a 1-0 victory. And Southampton are currently 1-0 up at Man United. Nice. Not at Man United, I should say. Nice. Sorry, versus Man United. G, let's come to you first. What do you think? Any game that you want to discuss there?
I'll give you a quick brief rundown. So, Everton Leeds, thoroughly enjoyed that game. I love watching Leeds. They're just, every game's the same, and it's just so open. But they seem to like make the other team open as well. It's not, if you know what I mean.
I couldn't agree more. I think they are ace. Absolutely ace. Yeah. You can't dislike the way that they play.
And you just see, like, I saw an interview with, I think it was Calvin Phillips after the game, and he's just physically exhausted.
Yeah.
They just run.
Yeah.
Can I just say, it's absolutely brilliant to watch, but it's fucking horrible when they're beating you 3-0 at home because it's just fucking running you off the pitch. You just want them to fucking crash.
No, I totally agree. I thought after 60 minutes yesterday, Southampton have scored again, 2-0.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, listen, we've been there, done that. Ollie out. I thought 60 minutes they would wane because the one thing about this Everton team is that although we do leak goals, that can't be denied, we are very steely in midfield. And I really thought that the legs of Decore, Allen, I thought they would just get joy in that last 30 minutes. And they just didn't stop. Honestly, Leeds just did not stop all game. I really like them. I honestly, I was disappointed yesterday because if you remember, Holgate missed one. I think Michael Keane missed one. We had a header ruled out for offside, didn't we? From a corner. We also had Hammers' goal ruled out. Richarlison was in on the left hand side and he blasted it over. I was disappointed that we didn't score at the very least. But I almost wasn't disappointed that we lost against the team that I just really like watching, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They're very good to watch.
What did you think of Everton, you two? Do you think that there are big issues there, or is it just Ancelotti figuring out the consistency or lack thereof in order to get up in that sort of top six or seven? They are still sixth. I mean, then they'll be outside of the top six now that Southampton are winning 2-0?
I think you're just a few signings away, mate, basically. And like I said before, I don't think you can just immediately replace the whole team. So, yeah, I think he's bought well. Allen looks fantastic, doesn't he? He was brilliant yesterday. I think that it'll take you a year or so, bring in a few more, maybe get one or two January, one or two in the summer, and then you can actually look at where you're at and think, well, can we push on?
Yeah. Strangey, anything to add on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely right. I think you're just a couple of signings away, you know, three or four quality bodies in the squad. A leader, as you mentioned, someone who, you know, can just, you know, they're going to be the skipper every week. They've won before, they're kind of that kind of player. Sort the keeper out, get a centre half in there. Yeah, you're not far off, mate.
It's nice to have that discussion, right, even after a loss, which just shows how good the game was.
Yeah.
Manchester City blast Burnley 5-0. Is that one of the results that caught your eye, Stranger, or was there another one?
I just thought they would, so I wasn't really, you know, I checked, I think it was like 20 minutes in, I checked the scores, I was at work, and I think they were 3-0 up, and I just thought, yeah, that's kind of what I was expecting, you know. Burnley don't look at it this year, and the firepower in the City team, I think that's the one thing in it with City, even though they're a bit inconsistent. When you look at the team on paper, the front four or five, even with injuries, it's just fucking frightening, isn't it? The players they've got, who they can just rotate in. So not unexpected for me. The game that I enjoyed watching most of, there was the Liverpool-Brighton game, sorry. Just from a personal standpoint, I was watching the highlights at work with my boss, who's a Liverpool fan, and he was just fucking going ballistic. And it was great to see. Great to see, yeah. And Klopp's interview at the end was just
so strange. Where do you stand, Strangey, on the five sub issue that keeps raising its head, most typically because of that German chap over at Liverpool?
I was saying yesterday, I think it's. I don't know, really. I'm not bothered. I don't understand why. I understand why people are opposing it. So the lower clubs who have got less depth in the squad and maybe a bit less resources to fill out the squad a little bit. But you should cut your cloth accordingly. You should try and have 18 to 20 players who are capable of doing a job in your squad anyway, you know, relative to where your squad is hierarchically in the league, I suppose. So I just don't get it. I think with the schedule and COVID and all that kind of stuff, there's definitely some weight to having it. But at the same time, I understand why these lesser teams are like, no, fuck that, because we don't have four or five internationals sat on the bench and we don't have three games a week to worry about. So I get both sides. I just don't really know which side of the coin I'm on, if I'm being honest. I know it's a bit of a cop-out. But
what about you, G? Really, what do you think of the fact that Klopp was seemingly annoyed at BT for picking them so much for the 12:30 game?
Well, apparently it's agreed with the the Premier League, isn't it, beforehand?
Yeah, the way that I think it works is, and I might be wrong here, but they do certain packages. So the first package is for the a load of first picks and the first pick of the weekend. So let's say there's 10 games a weekend. The first package that the Premier League put up for sale has so many first picks. The second package has so many first picks. And that second package is the one that BT have. And their first picks are 12:30. That's their slot. And it's swapped a few times. We've had years where Sky have had the 12:30. So they, so many times a season, get first pick. Now, I think what's happened, for example, this weekend, is looking at the fixtures, I can't imagine that it was the first pick week. I think it's more likely that Sky got first pick this week and they've gone for Chelsea-Tottenham at 4:30. So then BT get a pick and they've gone, right, well, we can have Palace Newcastle, Everton Leeds, City Burnley, Southampton United, Arsenal Wolves, West Ham Villa, Leicester Fulham or West Brom, Sheffield United. And they've picked Liverpool. But Klopp's issue is, well, you picked us too many times. What do you think?
I think if they'd have won the game, if they wouldn't have conceded that goal yesterday, wouldn't have mentioned it.
Yeah.
I think
exactly. Yeah,
it did. Like I say, if you're happy to take the money off the TV companies, mate, I don't think that you can have many complaints, can you?
No, but I'm pretty sure that you get an allowance of the money plus more money for every game that you have that's picked. So the fact that they're on all the time means they get more money.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the other week, Tottenham played on a Thursday night and then on a Saturday lunchtime. So, you know what I mean? It's not just it, Liverpool, is it?
No. No, but he does make out sometimes that they are the only club in the world, though, doesn't he?
I like you, but mate, I'm not going to come down to your level.
He's a top manager, but honestly, that interview yesterday. Right, well, I think that'll do us. So thanks very much to Charlie Cornwell. Shout out to Gary Cornwell, seeing his sons do so well. Bit of notoriety. Make sure, Gary, that they buy you a nice kitchen island. Everyone likes kitchen island, don't they? Yeah. Oh, George, make sure you buy your dad with all your podcast money a nice kitchen island.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get some fishing tackle. I think I know just the place.
Well, thanks to you both. Thanks for everyone that listened. We've been Tales of Togger. We will see you next week.